From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked and loaded right here on WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and we have always, like we do each and every weekday here on the show, we have a great show in store for you all. Today, we will recap what took place last night at the Breslin Center as the MSU men's basketball team, they took on Maryland Eastern Shore. No, not a close game whatsoever, but Michigan State did look good. And they got some things ironed out, if you will. A lot of depth on this team. So I was there at the Breslin. We'll recap what took place last night there. Also, Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm. It looks as though the UFC has scheduled a date for those two to battle in a rematch. All right, so we'll talk about that. We'll also give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jeremy Miller, who is the head football coach of the Pomona Westphalia Pirates. We'll have Throwback Thursday for you. And also, Justin Wilson is now a Tiger. All of that and so much more, folks. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Call in right now. We'll take your calls all the way up until we get off the air at 2 p.m. You can also go and comment on our social media page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. We'll also take your tweets. At Al Martin, WKAR is my Twitter handle, or, you know, tweet at the show at WKAR_sports. All of that and so much more. Let's hit you like we always do to start the show with our current sports quick hit headliners this time on this December 10th, Thursday. A sick Denzel Valentine had 11 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists. Just 4 assists away from another triple-double for Denzel to help number one Michigan State rout Maryland Eastern Shore 78-35 on Wednesday night. The Spartans are now 10-0. They are off to their best start since the 2000-2001 season when they were the defending national champions and won the first 12 games. They will host Florida on Saturday in a rematch of the 2000 NCAA final before opening the Big Ten season on the road against Iowa and Minnesota. Ariel Power, she had 23 points and 12 rebounds to help number 25 Michigan State's women's basketball team beat Davidson 73-44. It was the first double-double of the year for Powers and the 35th of her career. The Spartans remain on the road but return to the Great Lakes State to take on Oakland on Sunday, December 13th at 3 p.m. The contest will be televised on ESPN3. All right, on Wednesday night, U of M had its second decommitment in the class in a week as Farmington linebacker David Reese announced on Twitter he was withdrawing his pledge. He follows Norco, California athlete Victor Viermontes, who recently changed his mind. The 6'1", 238-pound Reese cited the chance to enroll early in January as important, and apparently that wasn't an option at U of M. So there you have that, another decommitment for Jim Harbaugh. All right, former MSU defensive coordinator and now Pitt football coach Pat Narduzzi signed a 2-year contract extension through the 2021 season. The school announced that today. 2 years were added to Narduzzi's original 5-year contract signed in December when he was hired as the Panthers head coach. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed. Pitt went from 8-4, I should say, in Narduzzi's first regular season this year and will conclude its season in the Military Bowl on December 28th against Navy. 6 days after Aaron Rodgers beat the Detroit Lions with a 60-yard Hail Mary pass as time expired at Ford Field, the Detroit Pistons were on the wrong end of a similar finish 30 miles north at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Now, this time, it was Matt Barnes knocking down a half-court shot with 1.1 seconds left to play. That gave the Memphis Grizzlies a 93-92 victory over the D. Andre Drummond had 18 points and 19 rebounds for the Pistons. Reggie Jackson added 18 points and 7 assists. The Pistons now hit the road tomorrow to take on the lowly Philadelphia 76ers. The New York Yankees They have traded lefty reliever Justin Wilson to the Detroit Tigers for minor league pitchers Luis Sessa and Chad Green. Tigers general manager Al Avila sounded pleased about the addition of Wilson, a power lefty who can attack hitters, which is an area he said has been lacking in the organization for years. The Detroit Red Wings, they will host the Montreal Canadiens tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Joe Louis Arena. The Wings are coming off a loss to the Washington Capitals on Tuesday, a loss that snapped a three-game winning streak for Hockey Town. The Montreal Canadiens scored three goals in the third period and defeated the Detroit Red Wings 4-1 at Bell Center on October 17th. So a bit of revenge for the Wings. At least that's what they're hoping for. All right. And last but not least, the UFC, they have targeted a bantamweight title rematch between Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey scheduled for July 9th in Las Vegas, despite a report that Holm wishes to fight sooner. Now, UFC president Dana White told Los Angeles Times on Wednesday that, quote, it's Rousey who is next for Holm. The Times printed a story earlier this week quoting Holm's manager, Lenny Fresquez, stating Holm has interest in fighting Misha Tate instead. Or I should say Misha Tate, excuse me. All right, folks, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll be taking your calls again all the way up until 2 p.m., You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on our airwaves. And again, tweet me at either Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. So much to get to, so little time. Let the show begin.
Different now, and there are many more platforms for them to express that.
Exactly, and they have been absolutely. And I, do I agree with Shady McCoy? No, Coach. Don't get me wrong. I don't agree with him voicing his opinion that way. But again, we're not talking about Darren Woodson. We're not talking about Herm Edwards. We're talking about Shady McCoy, DeSean Jackson, those type of players. They are in a different light in today's game.
They are. But you know what? You're still a professional football.
That's
You're
true.
A professional, man.
Oh yeah, I get it.
Don't lose sight of that.
Can we throw this into the mix here? And I know at some point they're going to be yelling at us, but this is really good stuff.
I'm done.
Shady McCoy.
I'm done. I'm done with all this, man. I'm done.
No, you asked me.
You want to go back and coach? No, I don't want to coach this. Cause this ain't professional football, man. It ain't about you. It's not about you anymore.
It's true.
The players think it's all about them.
Exactly, but that's the...
It ain't about them. It's about the game of football, man.
Let me ask you this then, Herm, because I've never seen you this passionate.
You are
a passionate person. Is it possible, because of who is coaching the Buffalo Bills and the way he likes to coach and the way he likes to talk, that perhaps some of these players, a la Shady McCoy, who has these different platforms, feels empowered to say whatever it is he wants to say?
I don't know that so much. I just think that we give players passes. Because what we do for a living, media, we love this. This hurts me when I have to see players do this. It just hurts me. And I'm a part of the media.
What about it hurts you the most?
It hurts me that they put their own identity, their own egos in front of the team.
Was there really any other way to start today's show? I don't know if you guys saw that impassioned rant from former NFL head coach Herm Edwards. That was actually during yesterday's NFL live broadcast. on ESPN. And Herm Edwards, I love him. He's one of my favorite personalities in sports because he just brings realness and a ton of passion whenever he's on the mic. And he always keeps it real. And the topic that they were discussing on yesterday's show happened to be centered around former Philadelphia Eagles running back, now with the Buffalo Bills, LeSean McCoy. He on yesterday, angrily dismissed the idea of Coach Chip Kelly, who's the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, shaking his hand when the star running back makes his return this Sunday to Lincoln Financial Field when he plays against his former team in the Eagles. He said this, quote, "Listen, man, Chip can't shake bleep at all. Nothing. He knows this. That's why he said it. I know him. He's very intelligent. I can read between the lines. Like I said, I have nothing against him. No hatred. We're not enemies. I won't say anything wrong to him. But there's nothing for us to talk about at all. Simple as that." Kelly traded McCoy to the Bills for linebacker Kiko Alonso in March, just months after McCoy became the Eagles' all-time leading rusher after his sixth season with the team. Kelly then signed the leading rusher of the NFL, former Cowboys running back DeMarco Murray. 5 years, $40 million. McCoy hasn't spoken to Kelly since the trade and said he has never received an explanation. Now, when asked on a conference call with Buffalo-based reporters earlier Wednesday if he would shake McCoy's hand after the game, Kelly responded, "Yeah, I would want to shake LeSean's hand. I tried to call him after, and I talked to his agent after we traded him. I always wanted to talk to LeSean. Again, I have no issues with LeSean at all. He did everything we asked him to do when he was here. You guys know him. He's a great personality. He's got an infectious personality. I've got tremendous respect for this man." Interesting dialogue, and I couldn't agree more with what Herm Edwards had to say, because I truly have to agree with him, just simply on the standpoint as looking at today's NFL and today's sporting world in general. Now, again, this is my opinion. You have every right to disagree with it if you do, and I want to get your thoughts on it. And it's just me speaking from a general standpoint when looking at sports today. I believe that the egos that we see in modern age sports eclipses any era of the past due to a lot of factors, due to how immediate social media is. Social media can take the average kid who's in his mom's basement putting together a YouTube video and make him an instant celebrity, folks. I mean, celebrity can be so instantaneous in today's world of social media that athletes eat it up. Without a doubt, if they have a big game, you better believe that those highlights are played over and over on your smartphone device. And what that does mentally to a player, if not trained in the art of staying humble and always working hard, that head can blow up times 20. Without a doubt. And we've seen that with countless athletes over the past. A prime example I always bring up happens to be the now humble. And I do believe he has learned his lesson without a doubt, and he is one of my favorite players in all of sports, not just the National Basketball Association, but LeBron James. Let's rewind back to the decision. You guys know the decision. I don't need to tell you what happened there. LeBron James, of course, he had played out his final contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers back during his rookie tenure with the team. And the talk of the town was whether or not LeBron James would extend that contract and stay loyal to the Cleveland fan base or take his talents somewhere else. So what did LeBron decide to do? He decided to hold an hour-long broadcast on ESPN entitled The Decision. And on that broadcast, he was going to announce where he would take his talents. And eventually he ended up leaving the Cleveland Cavaliers after waiting an hour on this whole decision thing. I can't believe that whole broadcast lasted an hour. And he looks back at it now. It was one of those things like, no other player needs an hour-long special to announce where they're going to go play basketball next season. Why did you decide to do that? And then they had the whole concert down in Miami with him, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. I mean, ego off the charts. Folks, we would not have seen anything of that sort back in the 70s, back in the 80s, even in the 90s, for that matter. I think the late 90s is when that whole fanfare started to shift, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, Michael Jordan in a way, when looking at the NBA and just sports in general. You know, Mike, you know, with the shoe contracts and the commercials, Mike was that guy that kind of really took that whole, you know, the endorsements of an athlete and the brand of an athlete to the next level. And I think it really, you know, has caused a detriment to sports in general. And I think that's what you heard. That's the passion that you heard from Herm Edwards just now. Him voicing his opinion on an individual in LeSean McCoy, who, and I did some research when looking at, you know, when I heard about Herm Edwards' rant, and I heard about this story, I went back, and when this trade initially happened, I mean, McCoy, I mean, he had some interesting things to say about Chip and the Eagles, but it wasn't to this extent. You know, was he happy about being traded? No, not at all. And at the time, he was quoted as saying that Kelly, quote, got rid of all the good players, especially the good black players, if you remember that, back in mid-September. And, you know, it's interesting stuff, man. Just this back and forth banter between these two. But, you know, he eventually went on to say that, hey, that's water under the bridge. I'm moving on now. You know, he said, I have no ill feelings toward the team. And then he comes out with this. So he's been contradicting himself for quite some time. But anytime you make a statement like this, you are taking away from what the primary focus should be this Sunday. And that's the Buffalo Bills taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. It should be about football. And when you make a statement like this and saying, no, I'm not going to shake Chip Kelly's hand, first off, that shows no class whatsoever, and it takes away from the primary focus of the X's and O's, the game of football, on Sunday. And that's where the focus should be. You've created this sideshow. A sideshow within the locker room, and now a sideshow that you better believe whoever the announcers are for the Bills and Eagles this Sunday are going to constantly bring up throughout the duration of that broadcast. And I have to agree. I mean, that's why, you know, a lot of people have asked Herm Edwards why he won't go back into coaching, and this is the reason why. He believes that Eagles are through the roof, and there's just a lot of things that he sees are wrong with today's sporting world, and he doesn't want any part of it. I found it to be a very impassioned rant. I posted it on my Facebook page. And again, it is gone on fire. I got a lot of comments, got a lot of text about it. When I posted it, folks who didn't tune in and didn't get the chance to see it, I didn't get a chance to see it live. I happened to be prepping for Current Sports TV when I saw it on social media, and everyone happened to be talking about it. Folks, the phone lines are open. I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite right now our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, hailing from New Orleans, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing? And did you see this rant yesterday?
I did see it yesterday, Al. I saw you posted about it on either Twitter or Facebook, one of the two. But yeah. I totally agree with Herm Edwards right here. I think players have become way too selfish, very egotistic, and everybody's concerned about theirs, not their teams, theirs. And this is a perfect example of that. We see Shady McCoy, like you said, he made the comments earlier in the offseason, actually, about how Chip Kelly didn't want black players on his team, which I thought was totally out of place and incorrect as well.
He's calling him a racist at the end of the day.
When you look at the NFL, I mean, I'm sorry. In the coaching realm, it's one of the few positions where it's inherently impossible to be racist. If you're a racist, there goes half your team at least. So, I mean, it just does not make any sense whatsoever to make those comments. And once again, he makes a totally unfounded rant about Chip Kelly. The guy let you go. He traded you. You should go out there, prove him wrong. It's fine if you hold a grudge. But after the handshake, just say, you know, be a professional. Shake his hand like a man and move on. And if you're so upset about it, show him up. Show him up in the game. Score some touchdowns against him. But that's all you can do. You shouldn't take to the media and make this about you versus a coach. Not even you versus a player. Not even somebody you could be hidden. Somebody you're going to be tackling. But you and a coach, come on, man. I think that's childish.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Isaac. And I just think we see a lot of this in sports. And you can even go back and, you know, when looking at the countless wide receivers, I call them, divas in the league. Sometimes, guys like Terrell Owens and, Chad Ochocinco. I mean, we see a lot of receivers who have that this huge ego, and they talk a lot of trash, and they start, a lot of junk. I call them sideshows. We've seen this countless times in NFL, and we see it in sports in general. And I just think it's certainly escalated, in my opinion, over the years, and this is certainly a prime example of it.
Well, I think you're right. The social media era, more than anything else, has exploded the amount of these rants that we see, these personal glorifications or personal problems with other players and coaches. It's just unfortunate because it becomes such a player sport. You know what I'm saying? It's just
the focus isn't on the team, just like exactly. Herm Edwards said. The focus is not on the team, and that's where it should be. Folks, I want to get your thoughts on the rants of Herm Edwards. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to transition, though, right now, while we're taking your calls, into this this Michigan State and Maryland Eastern Shore game, a 78-35 rout by the Spartans. Kind of a snoozer of a game, to say the least. Again, a blowout, complete blowout. But this is going to be the final lollipop, if you will, before Michigan State now gets into really the meat of its schedule, where they get ready for conference play. Again, they will play Florida this Saturday. And, a game in which they will honor the 2000 national champions, the team that beat Florida to win the national championship, that it had, players like Mateen Cleaves and Charlie Bell and so on and so forth on. And it's just an unbelievable team. They will be honored during this game, fitting seeing as though they are playing Florida that game. Florida always a good team every single year. And then they will take on Northeastern, and then Oakland, and then Iowa, Minnesota. They start conference play on December 29th, later on this month. So they're done with these out of conference, competition in which they're heavily favored against. And now they will start to, we'll start to really see where this team is. Again, the number one men's basketball team in the nation. But watching that game last night, I found a few things interesting. I know Tom Izzo must be pulling his hair out because, again, we mentioned how deep this team is, how deep this Spartan team is. I mean, they can legitimately go, 10 to 12 deep, to be honest. And right now, what really clicked to me when watching that game last night was when looking at the amount of players they can play, trying to find the right lineup at certain times in the game and making sure that whoever you do play gets adequate minutes to get whoever they are on the court into a rhythm as well. Trying to establish rhythm when you're only playing 3 minutes a session is pretty tough. So at the end of the day, we're going to start to see a lineup that's solidified as the number one lineup, as the starting lineup that's going to get more minutes than anybody. But it's so hard to try and pick that lineup right now because there are a lot of guys coming off the bench and playing well. The starters are playing well. And I think the key is right now, again, Denzel Valentine was only 4 assists from his third triple-double of the season last night. I really thought he was going to get it. I really thought he was. But Denzel Valentine is playing so good right now. Valentine is in such a groove right now that I think the real question here is, which role players can play adequately with Denzel Valentine? Which role players can play the best while Denzel Valentine is on the floor? Because Valentine is giving you good production, scoring. He's getting rebounds. But I think the most important stat of what Denzel Valentine is doing here is that while doing all of that and making sure his team is competitive throughout the entire game, he's making sure his teammates are involved. Which teammates, when they receive the ball from the hands, from the palms of Denzel Valentine, are getting the job done the most? That's the big question for me, because that is going to be key when Michigan State, plays higher competition, when they get into those gritty battles, when it's close with only, 2 to 3 minutes left on the clock and Denzel Valentine is on the floor, who do you trust to be all on the floor and to have the best chemistry with Denzel Valentine? I can throw out a name already that I think is solidified in that conversation in itself, and I think one guy is Bryn Forbes, without a doubt. They have that Lansing connection in full effect right now. Bryn Forbes is a guy who, Valentine and Forbes, just looking at last night, Forbes and Valentine, they combined to score 17 points by halftime when Michigan State led 33-16. Forbes ended up finishing with 14 points. And again, the seniors who were teammates at Lansing Sexton High School, They helped turn a 3-point lead into a 20-point cushion in the first half. It was close early on, and then Michigan State was able to stretch out into something like a 19-2 run to pull away. MSU was really scoring in spurts until that run. But, you know, and this is a team that likes to run. And Denzel Valentine, we saw last night, had a really, really nice pass, a flashy pass behind the back to Marvin Clark Jr. on the break. So, for me, again, to answer that question, which role players are playing the best when Denzel Valentine are on the floor? I think Bryn Forbes is certainly a name out there, without a doubt. He's the number one name, I think, right now. I think we're starting to see Aaron Harris emerge, really. Harris scored 9 of his 12 points in the second half of the Spartans. He's been great the last few games. He was really, you know, I talked to him after the game. He's really finding his rhythm from the three-point line. We all know how great of a shooter he was when he was at West Virginia before transferring to Michigan State. Really like Deontay Davis. Again, he's a guy who will give you at least 3 blocks a game and put up double digits. At least he'll give you at least 10 and 3. And also, he can rebound, you know, the basketball. He's always a force down low. Marvin Clark Jr., how about him? I mean, coming back from the injury, he has looked good in the few games that he's played this year. He looks solid. And we still have yet to see Gavin Schilling. So this is a good problem for Tom Izzo to have. But, man, trying to figure out lineups in certain situations in, you know, throughout the game is certainly going to be a challenge, and a good challenge for Tom Izzo and this team. But from last night, you're playing against Maryland Eastern Shore. I didn't even know that was a school until last night, all right, folks? But Michigan State has looked good this year. Again, they're undefeated right now. And I found, going to the postgame press conference, Bobby Collins, who's the head coach of Maryland Eastern Shore, he took the podium and was just, his jaw was on the ground at the amount of talent that this Michigan State team has. He was even quoted as saying, quote, "This is a national championship team." And he mentioned the Final Four and how he is really looking forward to seeing if Michigan State can get to that mountaintop. But this is a team with that type of talent. And he felt as though that Michigan State defensively, watching that game last night, Michigan State defensively, for me, that is also something that really stood out. Seeing as how they were able to take Maryland Eastern Shore out of their initial offense, force them to take tough shots. They really look confused. You know, Maryland Eastern Shore, they were, it's like they would run a play. Michigan State would combat it with great defense. And then it's like, all right, what do we do now? And of course, they took a lot of tough shots around the three-point arc. They threw up they had a lot of missed layups down low, and that's something also Bobby Collins noted. As far as what Tom Izzo had to say, he mentioned how Denzel Valentine, again, a great game for Denzel Valentine last night, folks. Again, 4 assists shy of another triple-double. And he did it while sick. He was sick last night, folks, and still puts up crazy numbers. Tom Izzo mentioned how he saw it during pregame warm-ups, how Denzel Valentine, he didn't look great. You know, as far as his demeanor is concerned, and, you know, Denzel was able to go out there and still propel his team to a complete blowout lead, building with like a 39-point lead with like 9 minutes left to play. Also, he was quoted in saying that quote, "the party is over now." And that's true. I mean, looking forward now, I'm like many of you out there. I mean, you know, where, you know, we want to see how Michigan State stacks up against, you know, formidable competition as the year moves on. I mean, we've seen them beat Kansas, which was, you know, their toughest game of the year so far, other than Louisville. Louisville was a tough matchup as well with guys like, you know, Trey Lewis and Damian Lee on that team. But other than Louisville and Kansas, hey, Michigan State has played competition that, you know, they just kind of walked over. But now you move on and really get into the meat of the schedule in Florida, Northeastern, Oakland. Don't watch out for Oakland. I really think that Oakland is going to be a very solid team this year, and I think Greg Campy has a lot of talent for that team. Isaac, did you get a chance to check out last night's MSU men's basketball game? And if so, what were your takeaways from that game?
I did. I mean, my first takeaway, of course, was, like you said, Denzel Valentine. I mean, no matter what this kid's battling, and obviously he faces intensified defensive pressure every single game, illness last night, he just finds a way to make it work. Like you said, only 4 assists, and that's a decent number, but he had a double-double, and he was sick. He didn't play that much. I thought that the Sexton connection was in full force yesterday. I thought he and Bryn Forbes, they had a couple moments in the first half where you could just tell that teammate chemistry. They've played together for a while, and You know, this was just a balanced scoring output from Michigan State. It was a blowout from the very beginning. So it didn't really surprise me that Michigan State walked away with this one quite easily. But I was just pleased to see all of the scoring off the bench, or, you know, I think any Spartan fan should be, just the balance on this team, how many people can contribute. Saw Alvin Ellis yesterday even look pretty good. And that's somebody who we haven't seen featured in the MSU season since his freshman year, to be honest. So it's a great sign for MSU. And, you know, it's going to be one of these things like the Warriors. I don't know when they're going to get tripped up. That's the big question, because they're 10-0 now and they are rolling.
You know, if I had a game to point to, and call me crazy, but I really think this Oakland team is so good. I think just watch out. Watch out for Oakland. That's all I'm saying. Don't be surprised if Oakland comes in ramped up for that game. Michigan State may take it lightly. I don't know. And Oakland may surprise some people. Watch out. I'm just saying, watch out for that game. I believe that's at the Palace of Auburn Hills, I believe,
as well.
Yes. Watch out for that game. Circle that game. I'm just saying.
Well, I know we're both big Oakland fans, but I've got to say, they only beat Binghamton by 11 points, 83-72. I actually caught a decent bit of that game. It was a great matchup, but seeing how MSU disposed of Binghamton so easily, I just can't see this Oakland team upsetting MSU. I think it's going to actually come for Michigan State later once the Big Ten season starts. I think that Iowa game on January 14th is one to circle. I think this is a decent Iowa team. Also, Florida on Saturday night. It's tough to sleep on a team that's been that successful and a new coach for them, new system, something that Tom Izzo and the Spartans haven't really seen before from this Gator squad. So I think that's also an interesting matchup.
Yeah, nonetheless, I mean, this team is playing at a high level, and we're starting to see why this team is the number one team in all of college basketball. And, yes, thank you for pointing out Alvin Ellis. He did have a solid game. He gave this team some great minutes. And I also talked to Tum Tum Nairn Jr. yesterday, and we had a bit of a chat about his plantar fasciitis that he is battling. He was getting dressed, and he had to put it back on the boot. So he really hasn't been able to, he is practicing. He is practicing. He did tell me that. He is practicing every single time they have a practice. But the plantar fasciitis is bothering him, and he has really no timetable as to when he thinks it will improve and eventually go away. But he's wearing a boot right now to sort of alleviate the pain. I've never had plantar fasciitis, but I talked to our current sports TV producer, Tim Elkins, who does have it. And he says it's a killer. It's a killer. So, but as far as what Michigan State needs to improve on, what I saw in that game, they got to limit turnovers because they want to push the basketball. That's what Tom Izzo teams do. They want to get out on the break and get easy buckets. But we did see a few turnovers, a lot of turnovers, primarily more so in the first half. They seemed to clean that up in the second half, but they were turning the ball over on fast breaks quite a lot in that first half that led to a few easy buckets for Maryland Eastern Shore. But we'll see. And I'm interested to see if this Michigan State team can keep up the defensive intensity that they have shown so far this year as well. But nonetheless, 10-0, Michigan State men's basketball team. They have looked very impressive, folks. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jeremy Miller, who is the head football coach of a team that came just short of a Division VII state championship in high school football. Jeremy will look at the year that was for his Powamo Westphalia Pirates. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Folks, they are a team that fell just short of a Division VII state championship. The number 4 Powamo Westphalia Pirates. They lost to the number 2 Ishpeming Hematites. Gotta love that name, right? Quick quiz for you, Isaac. What's a Hematite?
Isn't that some sort of ancient? Okay, there's a chance I'm gonna sound like a total idiot when I say this.
No, go ahead.
Prepared for that risk, but reminds me of some fossilized crab type of thing from back in the prehistoric age. I'm not sure. Is that, that's my guess.
That's totally wrong. Totally wrong. Okay. Hematite is actually a mineral rock.
Wow.
How about
okay,
that, right?
So pretty close.
Yeah,
right?
Kind of,
pretty close.
I guess. I don't know. You said something from the Dinosaur
rock,
age?
Rock. I mean,
you said that. I thought you were referring to like an animal.
I was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not an animal. Hey, it's a rock.
A rock is a rock. You know,
it's a mineral
fossil
rock.
Is a rock. A rock's a rock. Right. That's what I'm figuring.
It's that's a very old. Strong mineral rock. But yeah, that's Ishpeming's mascot. How cool. How interesting is
how
that?
How'd you learn that?
Did
it,
I had
is that
learn
just
it.
Your natural I, knowledge?
No,
your
not
genius
at all.
On all subjects. Typical Al Martin.
I'm not that smart. Trust me, Isaac. But I caught the game for 92-1. The team out at Ford Field, state championship game. And I had to look it up because I was seeing Ishpeming Hematites first down every single time. I'm like, hold on, what the heck is a Hematite? So I did my research before, like I do before every game I call. So that's how that's the only way I figured that one out. So, but yeah.
That's
but,
impressive.
Yeah, yeah. PW, they fell to Ishpeming, and Ishpeming has been a great team. They're in the UP. They've been a powerhouse in Division 7 football for quite some time now. But PW, I just felt so bad for them when calling that game because they've never won a state championship in high school football history, and they've gotten there twice now in the past 5 years. This year was their first final appearance since 2012, where they lost to, of course, Saginaw Novell in a 56-26 loss in the Division 7 final then. So they've never won a football state championship. They've gotten there twice and have fallen both times during that time. So I just felt really bad for them. They fell to Ishpeming, but what a ride it was. Of course, a team that featured Jared Smith. He became the first player to rush for over 3,000 yards in a season and set the state record for most rushing touchdowns at 53. Unbelievable kid, and he has one more year left with PW. He will be a senior next season. But, you know, I had Jeremy Miller on the show. He's the head coach. He's the third-year head coach for the PW Pirates. He's a PW graduate who played defensive lineman and tight end on the team back in 1996 and 97, taking over the tenure of Brad Weber, who does help still with the team. But I invited Jeremy to Current Sports TV. You can catch that episode tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV, and it actually starts with our coverage from out in Indy with the MSU football team, of course, as they top the Iowa Hawkeyes to book a ticket to the college football playoff. So coming right out of that montage and our coverage out in Indy, I first started by asking Jeremy his take on the incredible ride that the MSU football team has had this season so far.
Well, their ability to run the football has been tremendous. You know, that last drive was just an absolute thing of beauty, a masterpiece. Watching them do that those 22 plays was awesome. And, you know, it seems like this team has had guys step up and make plays when they've needed it all year. Somebody stepped up, and, you know, the Connor Cook pass to Burnbridge there, that was a huge two seniors making a play for you. And, you know, their offensive line just looks to be healthy and just absolutely run blocking very well for them. So I think it's all coming together. It's great.
Now, I got to ask you this, Jeremy, because everyone I've talked to since that moment has a story of where they were when they saw that drive take place and their reaction to LJ Scott crossing the goal line. Where were you, Jeremy, when you saw that?
I was sitting alone in my living room in my Lazy Boy. Everybody else was sleeping, and my reaction was, you know, I just sat and I stared at the TV, and I thought, I will probably never see anything like this again in a game like that. And a tear may have rolled down my cheeks. It was just such a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It was great. And you know what? You actually had to put your son to bed early.
I did.
He's
yeah.
9 years old,
yeah.
right? Oh, man. Yeah. They must have killed him
when
he woke up.
He had
right?
a big basketball game early in the morning, and I told him I'd DVR it, and I wouldn't tell him what happened. But when he got up, he demanded to know the score. So I told him, and, you know, we watched it later. So it was all good, but there was a struggle there for a while.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm
for sure.
Well, fantastic moment. And, of course, we actually will be out in Texas to cover the semifinals again, Michigan State and Alabama on New Year's Day. Looking forward to that. Unbelievable. All right, well, let's talk about your respective season with the Pruama-Westphalia Pirates. Again, you guys made it to the Division 7 state final versus number 2, Ishpeming. Crazy game. I was down there broadcasting it at Ford Field. You guys had a 16-0 lead at the half. Ishpeming was able to rally back and get the dub. Again, Jeremy, you guys have never won a state championship in the game of football. I can only imagine what the emotion was like when you walked in that locker room and had to address your team. How do you do something like that? What'd you tell them?
It was highly emotional. You know, they were obviously down and, you know, devastated, actually. And, you know, I really tried to just tell them to focus in on the season that they had. You know, being young people, you know, I don't think they understood that they'd look back someday on, you know, what a great season that it was. So we just try to tell them that, you know, it hurts right now, and it should, because, you know, it did for everybody. But, you know, when they look back years down the road and they look at the season, I think that they'll be proud of what they did. And that was the main thing that we tried to tell them.
Certainly in the moment, you can understand that disappointment to come that close and fall just that short. And also, I mean, this is your second state championship appearance in the last 5 years, because you guys did it back in 2011, in which you fell 56-26 to Saginaw Novell. At the time, you were on the assistant coaching staff during that moment. What do you remember about that game?
You know, that game got out of hand early for us. And, you know, that was a situation where at halftime it was a totally different message. It was, you know, it was 56 to, I don't know, 14 or something like that at halftime. And it was basically, you know, look, we'll see what you guys are made of. You can go back out there and, you know, just get drilled in the second half, or you can step up. And, you know, that group, they did step up. And, you know, it ended up being 56-26, kept them out of the end zone in the second half. So it was a totally different feel. This time, you know, being up at halftime and actually leading, you know, until whatever it was, 3 minutes and 50 seconds in the fourth quarter. This time it was different because it felt like, you know, something got taken from you, which it did. So, you know, very different games in that respect.
Would you describe the mood right now that's surrounding your respective team, Jeremy, as discouraged or motivated by what has occurred in these last two state championship runs, coming that close? Are you guys motivated by that, or has the air been let out the balloon?
Motivated. You know, of course, we're motivated now. We'll see what that looks like in August. But on Monday, the Monday after, you know, the finals, I walked through the school. I had to meet with a college that was there to talk to one of my players. And I looked in the weight room, and I saw a lot of those kids that are coming back next year in the weight room already. And just from talking to a few of them, I can definitely tell that, you know, they're hungry, and we'll see what they do with it. If they use it as fuel, which I think they will, I think that's going to end pretty well for us.
Now, you know, Jeremy, I first off want to give a salute to any team that can make it to a state championship, because the grind of a season is unlike any other. And, you know, to get six wins, to qualify for the postseason, and then to go on a run of undefeated streak to get to Ford Field, that's admirable in itself. But at some point, do you feel like if you guys keep knocking on this door, eventually it's going to, you know, be knocked down for a state title?
Yeah, I mean, it's time we kick the door down and we get it done. I mean, you know.
No more knocking.
No more knocking. No, no more knocking. We need to go down there and we need to get it. And if they keep working the way they're working, I firmly believe that's going to happen. If they use this last experience as fuel to motivate them and, you know, to get back there, I think we have a great chance to kick the door open and go and get our trophy.
What happened in the second half against Ishpeming?
Ishpeming did what we did to them in the first half. They controlled the ball. I mean, we, you know, very slow, methodical drive. They just were getting 3-4 yards a pop. You know, we made a couple mistakes. We couldn't capitalize on the one mistake that they made on the drive that put them ahead when they snapped the ball, and the quarterback had to jump on it. I think it was like a 3rd and 18. Mm-hmm. And they hit us with a counter play that we'd repped for, you know, many times. But, you know, to their credit, I mean, they're an outstanding football team, and, you know, it was just two teams that wanted that really badly. And unfortunately, we just came up a little short there in the second half. But the ball control on their part was what really did us in, I think.
An incredible season nonetheless, Jeremy, and you guys have an incredible squad coming back next year that includes a player that I'm sure if you are a high school football fan here in the area or just in the state of Michigan, you know this name, Jared Smith. First player to rush for over 3,000 yards in a year in the state of Michigan. He actually finished with 3,143 yards on the season. Also set the state record for most rushing touchdowns at 53. He ran for 193 yards against Detroit Loyola. When did you know that this kid was going to be special, Jeremy?
About midway through his freshman year, we were watching him just tear through JV defenses, and it was like, you know, this kid isn't being challenged. We brought him up. He accepted that challenge. We told him that, you know, we had a pretty good running back that year and that he was going to come up in a backup role, and he did. He embraced it. You know, he ran reps with the second team most of the time, and we'd get him into games that we were ahead, and you could see that as the season progressed, he just got better. The challenge of practicing with the varsity every day made him better. And you just caught glimpses, even as a freshman, that, you know, this kid is going to be something special. And to his credit, every year he's just gotten continually better because of the work that he puts in the offseason. He's a tremendous at being at things. Anytime we're doing something, he's there. He's committed, and he pushed himself in the weight room. He added some muscle, and I think that really helped him out this year.
Now, there's certainly a line between being good, great, or special, as you put it, Jeremy. When you saw him on that JV team, I mean, what sort of things was he doing that you just can't coach? It's kind of God given.
Yeah, his ability to go from standing still to fast is pretty amazing. And his vision, he has very good vision. Sometimes he cuts back maybe a little too much, but he's always looking, and I think his vision is something that sets him apart. And of course his size is something you have to contend with at 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's a load to bring down, and he's of course got the speed. So I think he's a total package that you're looking for in a running back.
And he's a junior, so he's coming back for you guys, as I mentioned, next season. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before the cameras even came on, Jeremy, and you said that, 3,143 yards on the year, 53 touchdowns. Those numbers could have even been higher if you guys would have made a few tweaks here and there and gave him the ball more, maybe, right?
Yeah, this year, I think one of the things that's remarkable about it is I've never been around a team that was injured as much as these guys were. We were constantly having to deal with injuries. I don't think during the regular season we started the same offensive line more than two games in a row, just in terms of guys getting hurt and having to shuffle stuff around. So, it was a situation where we had to keep him and others healthy. So we subbed a lot, especially during the regular season. And the numbers could have been better, but at the same time, who knows? Maybe he's in the third quarter and messes up his ankle or something, and those numbers aren't what they were. So
does that make your job even tougher? I mean, when you have a star player, a special player like Jared Smith, and you're so tempted to give him the ball over all the time because he can make special things happen with it. Is it tough to sort of manage those carries for him to make sure he doesn't get burnt out?
Well, he's a competitor and he wants the ball, but what makes it, I guess, easier or what makes it less challenging is the fact that he understands. I never got the impression. He was frustrated at times, but he was very understanding, I think, that other guys need to get in there. So as a coach, when you're able to sub your ones out and you see these younger guys or the twos get in there and get some playing time and, see them excel as well, because we had a lot of guys that got in and got to do that, that's a pretty gratifying thing too. So, I wouldn't say it's necessarily hard to manage, but, definitely the type of kids we work with makes it easier.
Jeremy, what's the toughest part about coaching in the postseason? Do you stress yourself out? Do you pull your hair out? It looks like you pulled your hair out. Okay?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The toughest part, I think, is just as you get going, you realize that there is no next week, and it is what it is, and, just to be constantly thinking about it. The weeks, the weeks go really slow, but you never feel like you have enough time. Mm-hmm. It seems like game day is just never going to get there, but practice goes so quick. And, that's kind of the stressful part, is making sure that you got everything in that you need to cover with them, because you don't get it next week. It's not, hey, we'll address that. No, this is it.
So. Wow. And now the off season is here, and you mentioned to me before, as we were standing over there before we took the studio, that now you're kind of bored now. You're like, okay, what do I do with all my time now? No more practice. So you let the kids rest a bit in the off season. When you guys rep this thing back up, what's the weight room schedule like? Are they still in the weight room right now?
Some of them are, but I told them that we'd get back together after the first of the year when school started, and, we'll typically lift on like a Saturday morning. We'll come in and we'll lift and do some speed and agility stuff. So Saturdays is kind of our day in the off season. We do that from after the first of the year till spring break, and then we start our summer schedule. So right now I know that they're in there lifting because I've walked through and I've seen a lot of them already back in there lifting,
right.
So like I said, if that's something that they're willing to do because of what happened, as far as losing the finals, I think it's only going to benefit us. But I think Jared will tell you that the thing that he's excited about is that four out of our six linemen are back next year, and they're in there lifting. I've seen a few of those guys, so that definitely bodes well for our future.
I tell you what, when you're a running back, you certainly have to have a special connection with your lineman, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Oh, boy, they open those holes for him. Okay. Now, you of course, have a certain affinity for the Pomona Westphalia football team, not just because you're from PW, but because you played for this team back in 96 and 97. What position did you play, Jeremy?
I played defensive end and tight end.
What was that like? I mean, what was your career like as a Pirate?
I was average, I would say. But I just loved football. I had a great coach. Kerry Bayshore was there. He was my coach all 4 years. I moved up with him from JV to varsity. And he really instilled a love in football in us and in me in particular. So, you know, just growing up in the community and, you know, feeling the support that they give us and, you know, how much it means to people, it's great. I mean, there's not a whole lot of places like it, I don't think. So it means a lot to be back there and coaching.
Yeah, and with that history, I mean, you probably bring a lot more. It's more passionate for you, seeing as though you are from that area, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you think about all the work and stuff that you put in, and to still be a part of it and able to work towards that state championship for the school you grew up in, the school you graduated from, is a special thing.
Yes, it certainly is, and I can only imagine what that personal connection is like growing up in an area, becoming the head coach of one of the most coveted teams in that area, and then leading them to a state championship run. Jeremy has already done a great job in just his third year. If you want to catch the visual of that episode, and from that interview went to the 12th man, it was a great episode, and we also highlight the Big Ten championship game between Michigan State and Iowa. We shot our entire introduction down in Indy. It's hot footage, folks. You do not want to miss it. You can catch it tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Get your DVRs ready if that's past your bedtime, okay? And I know, Isaac, you wanted to give our folks a corny joke, right? A joke of the day?
I do. A joke of the day? Yeah, let's go with that one. So, you know, we got these new buttons, these new sound things, so I figure it's about time we use some of them, so we're going to incorporate that one right after I say this. But after learning the definition of the hematite word that you taught me, Al, I'm going to say that, you know, PW, great season of them. Jarrett Smith also, unbelievable quarterback, but it's tough. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Ishpeming just rocked.
Isaac, okay. You need to work on that, my man. That was a terrible delivery. That was terrible.
Well, I thought it was decent. Well, we'll let the callers decide. I know people are probably in tears right now.
No, I don't think anyone's I think they may be laughing at you, not with you. I don't know. That's hilarious.
Same thing.
We'll get it together. We'll get it together, though. Thank you, Isaac. But, yeah, we got to start using some of those buttons, though, man.
Yeah, we do.
Those are hot. That was hilarious. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by bringing you Throwback Thursday. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Wow, just 5 minutes left in this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a jam-packed week here on the show. It's been a fun one, and we still have one more day left to go. Can you believe that? And each and every Thursday, we love to close out the show by taking a look at sports history. We dub it Throwback Thursday, where we hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at the sporting events and different, you know, tidbits that happen on this particular date in sports. Here we go, Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Go!
Okay, let's take a look at what happened on this particular date in sports history. Today is Thursday, December 10th. And on this day in 1919, wow, that's a long time ago, the National League voted to ban spitballs by all new pitchers. The Rules Committee officially worked out the ban the following February. What does that mean? Spitballs?
What do they mean
by that?
About
that in, like, high school cafeterias.
Do they mean, like,
baseball.
Actual spitballs where you ball a piece of paper to a straw and
that,
blow?
I feel like that's got to be something else. I'll do some research.
Yes, yeah, please look at that. The National League voted to ban spitballs. That's craziness. All right, that happened in 1919. That's a weird one. All right, 1939, the National Football League's attendance exceeded 1 million in a season for the first time. And now look at where those numbers are now. I mean, that's just happenstance now. But, wow, 1939, that's where it all started, huh, folks? All right, 1962, Frank Gifford of the New York Giants was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I just picked up, actually, the latest edition of Sports Illustrated, and shout-out to LeBron James. He is featured on there. I'm pretty sure he's been on the SI cover about 50 or more times, right? But on this day, in 1962, Frank Gifford of the Giants was on the cover. All right, 1972, the American League voted to adopt the designated hitter rule in a three-year experiment. In December of 1975, the American League voted to permanently adopt the designated hitter rule. Gotta love that. It happened in 1972. And also, on that same day in 1972, the longest non-scoring pass in NFL history was made when Jim Hart of the St. Louis Cardinals threw a pass from his own one-yard line to Bobby Moore. Of course, you know who that is. That's Ahmad Rashad. Moore was tackled on the Rams' one-yard line. The pass was officially 98 yards. How about that? The longest non-scoring pass in NFL history back in 1972. I wonder whether or not that record has been broken now. I don't know. I have to do some research on that one, too.
For non-touchdown pass, I could see it making sense. But I know in NFL history there's been a 99-yard touchdown pass without a doubt.
Right. Oh, yes. Well, oh, yes, certainly.
I mean,
but without a score, though, this is the longest one, the longest non-scoring pass in NFL history. So I don't know if that's been broken or not. That's pretty cool. All right, 1992, the NHL awarded franchises to Miami and Anaheim for the 94-95 season. That's a game changer in 1994. Art Monk of the New York Jets set an NFL record of 178 straight passes with a reception. Oh, I'm pretty sure that still stands.
Yeah, 178.
What?
Nobody's touching that one.
That's crazy. That's craziness. Art Monk of the New York Jets. All right, 2001, ESPN announced that it will be expanding into Europe with its first network, which would feature great sports memories from the past. The launch was planned for early 2002 in France. That's pretty cool. ESPN expanding its horizons. And last but not least, on this day back in 2007, Michael Vick was sentenced by a federal judge in Richmond, Virginia, to 23 months in prison for bankrolling a dogfighting operation and killing dogs that underperformed. I tell you what, I think Mike Vick, though, he has certainly turned his life and his career around. I'll say that, Isaac.
Yeah, he's done a good job of that. And
that was
ugly,
easy
though. To give him a second chance. But that was terrible
ugly.
When it happens. There was so much outrage. But looks like, I mean, what, current sports today, Al? We had a joke of the day, the fun fact of the day, and now a second fun fact of the day. The spitball actually is applying spit, petroleum jelly, or some other liquid substance to the ball and makes it come out like a fastball but with the motion of a knuckleball. I'd like to see Justin Wilson try a few of those for the Tigers.
I wouldn't, because he may be suspended. But that's interesting. I didn't know what a spitball was until today. Wow, we are getting edumacated here on today's current sports. So there you have it. Throwback Thursday. Now, I know they're going to do a 30 for 30 on Mike Vick, that whole incident with the dog fighting. But all right, folks, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. See you here tomorrow. And be easy, people.